You're about to hear the Daf Yomi on Masechet Chulin from Daf Cycle number 12 in the year Tovshin Ayin Aleph. It'll be followed by a rapid review enabling you to get a quick glimpse of the Daf, and then I'm going to replay you the Daf from the 11th cycle from the year 2004, which you might enjoy more because of a different ambience and different participants. Enjoy. Today's Daf, Masechet Chulin, is Daf Yud Chet, but we are holding a little bit before, and we're up to the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Beit, right at the end of the fourth line above the bottom. Omer Avuna Bar Rav Katina, Omer Shimon Ben Lakish, Shalosh Pigimote. We spent the entire day yesterday discussing the concept of a pigima, notch and a knife, and we described two basic types, pigimot, the Ogeret and the Misuchsechet, and today we want to discuss the extent of pegima in general. Now, there's a number of different halachot that concern pegimot, concern notches or breaks in a material. So Reb Shimon ben Lakish is quoted as saying there are three actual halachas about pegima, and interestingly, they all have the same shiur. And those are Shalosh Pegimotin, Pegimat Etzen BePesach. The Torah assured a breaking of a bone in any way on the Korban Pesach. Etzem Lo Tishburubo. You must not break a bone. You might have thought breaking a bone is actually cracking it into two, but the truth is that cutting a bone would also be over on this lob, and the extent of the cut would be to make a break. It would be the equivalent, as we'll see, of the pegima of the sakim, which we'll discuss in a moment. Pegimat ozen bivchor. And then we have another halacha, which is the shchita of a bichor. Now, a bichor, besides the general halacha of all kachim, that you're not allowed to be paid in the kachim without a pegam, and so on and so forth, there's also a special halacha by bichor, which requires a mumche to be paid. We have all types of gezeras that are more machmer on bichor, because we worry about kohanim. They have too much interest in making sure that a bichor will get a mum, and not shechting on a mum, which may not really be a mum. So when it comes to actual shchita of the bichor, we might be a little bit more machmer, and therefore we don't throw in Bechor with all of the other kachim. In point of fact, if Lemaisa, the Pigam on a Bechor would be precisely the same as everything else, there'd be no point in mentioning separately Pigimat Mum Bechor. We could simply say Pigimah Bechor or Bechor or something like that. But the truth is that a Bechor is rather limited on its mumin. That's because it can never be a female. Because it can never be a female, it doesn't have some of the mumin. Obviously, it has other women. If it would only be a female, then it would have only women of a female. But nicks in the vaginal wall, things like that, are going to be difficult to find in a bechor. So because of that, we list separately the pegimat ozen, which is the most obvious, where you have a little tiny nick in the cartilage of the ear. And that would be considered to be a mum, and we'll see how big that nick would have to be and why it's compared here to our case of the pegimat sakin and pegimat mum bekodashim, which would include the female. Rav Chista, aren't you forgetting the thing we've been talking about all day? What about the pigimat sakin? You say there's three things in the set. Why don't you include the knife of shchita? The idach bechulin lo kamayr. Aha, this goes back, of course, to the big issue, which is the din of the sakin more a chulin issue, since it's generalized in terms of the boser, or does it too relate to kachim? And so we have two approaches here, too. Rav Chista has four members of the set, because he includes pegimat sakin. The Tanakama that listed it, which is Ravunah Barav Katina's Loshen and Rish Lakish, says that they didn't want to add pegimat sakin because here it's referring specifically to Kodesh. Now, the shiur of all four of the above is the same as the pegima of the Mizbeach, says the Gemara. Gechulan pegimatan kedei pegimata Mizbeach. And what is the shiur of pegimata mizbeach v'kama pegimata mizbeach? Kedei shetachkor ba tziporen. If you can run your finger, nail across the stone of the mizbeach, and it gets caught in something, then that's not called avanim shleimot. And the Torah wanted these stones to be completely sholem, that is to say, without any cracks in them. Meitvei, does it not say kama pegimata mizbeach? Reb Shimon bar Yochai omer tefach. Reb Elazar ben Yaakov Vomer Kezayit. Now, both of these are obviously absurdly more than Kedei Shetakva Bat Tziporin. You're talking about a Tefach. I mean, that's the size of your closed fist. Or a Kezayit is many hundreds of times greater than a Begima of a Tziporin. And says the Gemara, there's two separate issues here. Remember that we can have a Pagam in the actual Avanim of the Mizbeach. That's based on the Halacha of Avanim Shleimot. And there, any crack is considered to be not Shalem. So Ha is the Avna, but when it comes to the larger piece, that's a reference to Ha the Sida. The Sid is a covering over the Mizbeach, which was renewed often, and that was a lime. A lime is not, the Torah is not makbid on it until it actually looks not nice. So that covering, if it doesn't have a shear of a tefach or of a kizayit, is that considered to be a pegima? Habesida, habeavna. Omravuna, getting back to the halacha we said before, we were speaking yesterday about the din that we learned from Shaul, which turned out to be in Asmachta, the Veshachatatem Bezeh. We discovered that that's really a halacha in the din of a kovet of a chacham, so that the chacham ha'ir is supposed to be given the sakinim of all of the shochtim to look at. How about, says Ravuna, tabach, that doesn't do that, he's a chutzpanyak, and he was lo sar sakinakam chacham. He did not show his knife to chacham before doing the shchit. The din is that mishamtinan lei, because of the kovet of the chacham, we put him into a nidui. Rav Amar, what do you mean nidui? We closed down a shop. Ma'averinan lei, we no longer will give him a hechsher. U'machrazinan abisra de treifei. And we put up signs about all of his meat. His meat is treif. V'lo pligi. The truth is that these are two separate cases. They're not arguing. Kan b'shinim tzit sakino yafa. One is talking about where we look at the knife, and it's perfectly good. The only thing that he did was he didn't show it to the chacham. There is a din that you're supposed to put someone into nidui and ultimately into chera for having chutzpah. So that din is mishamtin alei. That's one of the menadim al kvod harav, and this is a direct insult to the rav. But the question of his actually not checking properly and his knife found as being no good, there we have to be choshesh, that his meat in general wasn't kosher. And because of that, we actually shut him down, and we let people know not to buy that meat. Ravina says, oh, no, 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 no. If he actually was found to have non-kosher meat, because his knife wasn't good, we actually fine him not to be able to sell that meat to anybody. You put that meat into a pile of yes. They are feel like a chavim nami lo mazvin, because that way it's so disgusting. Obviously, this is just a turn of phrase. It doesn't sound very clean in English, so we'll leave out the four-letter words. But what it means is we make it exceedingly unpalatable, and even a goy wouldn't bite. There was a maisa. There was a certain tabach that did not show his knife to Rav Bar Chinuna, who was the chacham here. And so he put him into cherem, shamte, initially with nidui, and if he doesn't apologize, all seder hadvarim, which we'll get into in Merit Cotton again. The avre, he shut down his store. The akre is abisra de treifahi. And he announced that all meat that was purchased for this guy is treif. Ikla marzutra vervashi lagabe. Marzutra Mavashi came to learn by Rav Bar Chinuna, and he was feeling that something needed to be done for this guy, but the guy was not initiating proceedings. It's not his part to go and chase the guy. But he was very upset because Lomaisa, the guy, did not have a parnasa. His family was dependent on him, and it would be a pagam in the covet of the Rav for him to go chasing after the guy. So he told the Talmid HaChomim, who came to visit him, Marzutra Mavashi, he said to them, look, why don't Lainino Rabbanan Bemilte do me a favor and go see if you can get things moving? The Tolubei Taflik, I mean, he's got a family and he's not making any money and he's just not coming. But Ravashi Lasakin. And Ravashi came as if to do a test of his sakin, and he found that it was perfectly well checked. Venim said, Yafai, he had done a good job. And because of that, Akshara, he pretended to be the instead of the Moatsa Tatit, the Vada Kashrut, and he said it would be okay. So my sutra said, isn't this like sort of an insult to the Rav of the year? That's like we're just walking in here and saying it's kosher after the Rav said it wasn't kosher. Lo lechish mar l'saba? Aren't you afraid of the covet of the old man, of Rav Bachidina? Your big machshir, what he said wasn't kosher? Amale, on the contrary, that's why he sent us. Shlichutik avdin. He's just looking for an excuse to get this guy back in. So l'maisa, he made his point. Having made his point, he can leave it up to the Vada Kashrut. So he put it into our hands. Omar Rabba Baravuna. The case that we had in the Mishnah, if we take a look in the Mishnah again, I think it's kedai for us to look on Tetvav Amud Beit. So remember that we had over there a list of various things. We had the Magal Katsir, the Megera, the Shinayim. Now what's interesting is Shinayim is two teeth. I mean, it could have said Hashem, but it says Shinayim. Now that would mean that the Hashinayim part is actually related to the Magal Katsir, the Megera, because obviously if there are two teeth, then there's clearly going to be a break between the two teeth, at least Kadesh Tachkor Batziporin. Continuing, however, it says Hatziporin. Hatziporin, there's no reason why Hatziporin should have a break. It certainly is possible to sharpen a nail. Look, Tziporin can be extremely tough and sharp, certainly like a Krumit Shokonah. So when the Mishnah is saying that Tziporin isn't kosher, it can't be because of a pegima. It's not a given that a tziporin has a pegima. Therefore, the tziporin has to be not related to the closing words, because the tziporin doesn't necessarily have to be chonek. No. So, therefore, we want to be medayet, says Rabba Bar Avuna, in the difference. If you have a sheinet tulusha, you have a single tooth that is not attached to a living animal, and you have a tziporin tulusha that is not attached to a living organism, there's nothing wrong with using that. Mutar lishchot ba lechatchila. It's not even a b'diavad. That's a perfectly kosher shechita. What? Doesn't the Mishnah say, the Shein Ashen is not a problem. Note that the words in the Mishnah were Shinayim, and what Rabba Bar Avuna said was Shein. Zahor v'choda pavetarte. One is referring to a single tooth that may even be inside of a detached jaw, but that's perfectly all right. It's a shechita knife, basically. And the two is a problem of, even where it's in a detached thing, it's a problem of mipnei shein chonkin. Tzipor na tzipor no kasha habet lusha. As we saw earlier, there's a separate pegam of something which is mechuber, which Rebbe had learned out from the pasuk, and that was clearly not a problem in the Mishnah of really mipnei shein chonkin, because after all, why would we say a tziporin is chonkin? So we have to learn that the tziporin was being brought in agav the shinayim, where there's two problems. So it's a gradual. The Mishnah is gradually going from the question of pure chanika to the question of a case which involves both chanika and the possibility of chibur, which is shinayim, where normally there's more than one, and finally gets to tziporin, where we're only talking about the problem of mechuber. No, we said before that you don't have to do it before every shoot. It's lamais, it's whatever the seder is in the community. In other words, it may be, should be every day. But it's not really a very convenient thing for the chacham. Sometimes the makom hashkita. I mean, we went to places of shekhti which are an hour out of the nearest community, because you know that's where they. So it's done wherever the chacham is kaveya. He wants to come. He wants to see. It could be. No, it has nothing to do with kashrus. It's a covet. It's the covet to assert that it's underneath his shlita.
Once a month.
Yeah. However, the community is in the Masada. It's not for catching. It's not for catching purposes. For a sense of community and dignity of the Chacham. It's a takana for the covet of the Chacham. As we Gemara said earlier, there's a din of eight echa neman b'isur. We don't need a hechsher. There's no such thing as a hech. So, of course, we're lamaisa. You're not samech on the individual. There you want a hechsher. But at Niikra, then anybody who is a regular, normal Jew who shat and he gives you to eat, have a right to eat it. Why not? Neman b'isur. I mean, this is true for everything. Zokter Helekamish. Hashochet b'magal katsir. Now, we've discussed up until now the magal yad, which we said had one smooth edge and one edge that was full of notches. And we didn't mention now what the din would be a mago with a mago katsir. Over there we had a problem with the mago yad, that you might use the wrong side. A magal katsir has got a different problem. Even on the same side where you do have the pegimot, fascinatingly, it only causes a problem in one direction, not in the other direction. And the reason for this is, I don't know, we didn't have a nice picture of a magal katsir. That is not a good picture of a magal katsir. That is absolutely wrong, as usual. So that's what a magal katsir is not. I don't know. We wouldn't want Chas V'Shalom to have any, ear of what we... Why is that wrong? It's wrong because you need to have the tip smooth so that there'd be nowhere where there would be anything that could cause damage. The reason that this picture is wrong is because, as Rashi has clearly proven from the Gemara, it doesn't matter whether you're falling over a sharp edge or you're being pulled out over a sharp edge. Either way, a sharp edge is considered to be ripping. The reason that a magal katsir is not a problem in one direction is because there's no sharp edge at all. You can run it right across your hand, it won't cause any damage. Why is that? Because the tips, which in this picture are sharp, aren't. Because it's not meant to cut at all with the tips. The cutting edge is inside of the notch. Each notch grabs a piece of wheat and rips it. That's how it works. And it has no interest at all in having a sharp edge, which just causes the wrong sort of cut anyway. So what you're interested in doing is swinging it at a pile of wheat, which you hold, and then ripping it so that inside each notch has grabbed a piece of wheat. Let's say there's 50 of these notches. Each one of them grabs one or two pieces. You pull, and there's a sharp inside the indentation. There's a sharp edge, and that's what cuts. But along the top, if you pull your hand across it, nothing will happen to you. There's nothing sharp. Therefore, there's no problem unless you're going in the direction of the rip. Obviously, if you get the throat caught in that rip, it's going to be a disaster. It's worse than most type of megira. So because... The problem in both of these pictures is that the peaks are not smooth. And a peak, Rashi shows, a peak will tear no matter how it's going to be, in what direction the basar, the tzimin, is going to be going over it. So here the point is that in one direction, it doesn't do any damage. That's what the meaning of kafuf harbe means. It's very bent, so that the entire structure is bent over in order to grab. You have a little smooth edge, which makes it look almost rounded towards the inside. So therefore, b'derech halichata, why is this different than a magal yad, where over there one side is smooth, and the other side is damaging? Because over there, it's a completely different side. Over here, it's a question of, if you go one way on this side, it's going to rip terribly. If you go on the other way, which is really not the natural way to go, then it will cut properly. Because it'll be like a sacking all over your egg, basically. It's just going up and down, up and down. But it's not being caught on anything. So since it's very easy to get confused between halicha in one direction or havo in the other direction, we have a machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai posli. Beit Shammai says, look, you have to be worried about a gezeira over here. It's possible that if we're going to be mocked at this, the guy will pull the other way. Well, Beit Hillel, makshirim. Beit Hillel says, look, we certainly lechatchila aser the same way we aser all cases where you might come to a problem, where you have a single pagam at the Rosh HaSakim, or where you have one side good and one side bad. But if Lamais, you know for a fact that it was done properly, if you didn't listen to the halakha that says don't use it, b'diavad the shchita is kosher. V'im hichliku shineha, if you smooth it down completely, then it really is like a knife with a lot of ups and downs in it, because there's no chashash in any direction. So if you're machlik the shinaim, then it's basically a knife with just no notches, but ups and downs. Omrabhi Barava, Omrabhi Yochana. Beit Hillel noticed said machshirin. Now, when we usually talk about being allowed to eat, that's called Isser Behet. Okay, is there veheter? We would say it's mutter. But when you're talking about machshir or posel, you're not referring to the results in terms of iser veheter. You're referring to the din of the shechita. Is this a shechita kshera or is a shechita psula? Now that's a very different kind of way of referring to iser veheter. Because iser veheter is a straight out, can I eat the meat or not? That's the question. Is it osir or is it mutter? You're saying this is a kosher shechita. What that means to me, said Rabbi Yochanan, is that afki shechshiro Beit Hillel. When Beit Hillel was saying it's kosher, he was only saying it's a kosher shechita. That is to say, of course you can't eat it, but it's kosher l'tahara midena vela. Because if he wanted to say that it was really kosher meat, then he would have said so. So, ba'achilat asura. Even Beit Hillel is made up. We do have to make a gezera of a locha because of the possibility of hava'ah, which would be terrible. And in this case, he agrees that we have to be more machmer than the case of the Magal Yad. Om Rav Ashi, exactly. I mean, the Mishnah basically says that. Diktani Beit Shammai poslin u'Beit Hillel machshirin. Okay? I mean, that's lokatani. Beit Shammai osrin u'Beit Hillel matirin. Now, wait a minute. I mean, the Mishnah is inconsistent, really, with either approach. As a matter of fact, this is one of those kind of Mishnahs that seems to be calculated to keep you wondering. Because if we were really dealing with the din of Nevela, we'd have a perfectly clear way of talking about a Nevela. Is it Mitame or is it not Mitame, right? That's what we've used all along. So if it would be a Nevela, we'd say, Kenevela, it's Mitame Babasa. Nothing about that over here. So if you were right, as the Gemara in Rav Ashi, V'latimeh, Litnei Beit Shammai Mitaminu Beit Hillel Matarin. If you're looking for a perfectly matched language, and you're claiming that the Mishnah is trying to make it clear that we're not talking about Isser V'heter in terms of Achila, we're talking about the act of Achila, of Shechita. Why the heck doesn't it talk about what the dispensation is vis-a-vis Nevelis in terms of Tumah V'Tahara? So it should have said, Beit Shammai Mitamin or Beit Hillel Mitaharin. So therefore, clearly poslin or machshirin might be just as meaningful as osrin or matirin. I mean, I'm not proving this, obviously, but I'm suggesting that it could be chada miltahi. You cannot prove just from the language that Rabbi Yochanan is right. Lamaisa, as Rashi points out, Rabbi Yochanan was not being medayik for him. Rabbi Yochanan was saying this is the way he was taught. I was taught that kishikshiru Beit Hillel, it's only in terms of the din of Nevela. It's not a Nevela, but he wasn't being matar b'achila. So, okay, you're trying to say that anybody would see that from the Mishnah. I disagree. Now, before we begin, which we're about to enter the lovely world of Hagroma, when we're talking about the Kanar, the Gagera, the windpipe, if you look at our picture, what's your problem? I can't go like this? All right, Yelly is all the way back. Yelly has eyes in the back of her head, so you probably can see through there. So if you look carefully, this looks something like one of those plastic dryer tubes that has the spring inside that gives it strength. If you'll notice, you have these cartilages rings, each one of which is called a ring, a tabat. But note that the cartilage ends at a connective tissue right here. Each one of these rings is not a full circle, but it's held together at the back by a piece of connective tissue. You have cartilage, connective tissue, and inside of the ring is the lumen of the actual windpipe. Which, of course, continues between the rings, of course, it continues on. So the rings are outside, really, of the actual kana itself. Cartilage? Yeah. Just like your ear. There you've got a ring, right? So now, the highest part is the larynx. If we get a good picture over here. Yes, okay. This is a view. These are actual pictures. So again, they look a little messy. But this is a view looking up towards the head from the bottom with a cut that's gone straight through the larynx. Now that, if you look carefully, you'll see that the cartilage, of course, goes all the way around, so that you have a full ring, where the other rings had just connective tissue. Here you have cartilage on the ring. Uppermost, lower when the animal is hanging by feet. We call that lower. But I'm just saying, if you're thinking in terms of the way the body is shaped, this is up by the throat, with this is where your vocal tubes would be and so on, vocal cords would be. And it actually is controlled by a muscle that opens and closes to make sounds, mooing in humans, the more complex mooing that we're doing now. All right, so this is called the Tabat HaGdolah. This is the big Tabat because it's complete. All the other Tabaot are the Tabaot HaKtanot. This is from the outside. This picture shows you in green the Tabat HaGdolah, which is actually part and parcel of the larynx itself. And then the kona in the other color coming out, in the actual skin, a normal color coming out of it. And that continues all the way down. Here they've got a representation. So you've got the kona going all the way down. Hopefully there's a picture where it gets into the lungs. But if it doesn't, what can you do? I assume they have it later. I should have looked through this before. Crazy. Yes, they don't. Oh, here they do. All right. So here you've got a picture of the kuna. No, this is okay. It's a funny shot because they're trying to show the place where. This is the kuna. They've taken off the lobe, but this is a picture of the kuna as coming down on the back of the lung. It actually looks a lot more complex because the lung has separate pieces that it got on the other side. But it splits up inside into smaller, what we call the bronchial tubes, which are the same as the kona, but without any rings, and it gets smaller and smaller into the actual air sacs of the lung. So this, and here we've got another picture as well. You can see the cutaway larynx, the pharynx above it, and the windpipe that's coming on down like that. Okay, so now... So now the question is, the area that was given for shchita is the area called the kona. Anything above the kona is not kosher for shchita. Anything below the kona is cutting into the lung, and that is not cutting into the kona. Precisely what defines the area of the lung on the bottom is something that we'll be talking about later. Now we're talking about the upper side, close to the throat. What is the mokum of shchita above which would be called a hagroma, going out of its place, one of the five central tsulam halacha l'vashbi Sinai of the nature of shchita. So we have a very fascinating shchita, none of which is nogea l'halacha, but the way that Rashi explains the Gemara, the question of the Gemara revolves around the issue of whether the area of the lumen that is surrounded by a tabat that is not shlema, is that considered to be kona or not? Or is the only part that is the kona that the Torah told us to shech, the part where it's pure kona without cartilage? But a cartilageous kona is not called kona. So bishlema, if it's in the tabat hagdola, the upper tabat, since that goes around the entire thing, that is all that's there. So that's the kona. But the parts in between, according to one shita, this is Rashi's understanding in the Mishnah, is not considered to be a kona at all. Very strange approach. Only between the tabaot might be kona. But we'll see. We'll get to that in a moment. First, let's talk about the shchita within the tabat hagdola. So says the Mishnah, shochet mitoch hatabat v'shiyer ba melo hachut apnei kula shchita tokshira. The Tanakhama is clearly saying that the uppermost limit of shchita is the top of the tabat hagdola. Above that, it becomes now larynx, pharynx, and cutting through the head. So you're not cutting kona anymore. It's true that you do not see any difference in the tissue as you move down. But the fact is that that is a separate area of the body. So the larynx itself is not kosher for shchita. You can only get up till the tippy top, even if it's just a chut, melor chut. It's the size of a hair. But it would have to be al pnei kula. You'd have to have a complete circle of cartilage, even though it's very thin. That way you're certain that you did the shchita within the uppermost limit. If you went out of that, even if, and this is a remarkable assertion, even if you went out before, after you finished the rove of the shchita, but before you completed cutting the whole thing, which you wouldn't need to do anyway. So suppose you had stopped the shchita at the rove point, it would have been a perfectly kosher shechita. So you would think, what's the difference? If you continue cutting from that point on, you're cutting a piece of meat. There's nothing wrong with cutting a piece of meat, is there? Nonetheless, the Tanakhama says, any act that's still associated with the act of shechita has to still be within the makom of kosher l'shechita. Otherwise, it's all viewed as one act, and this would be called a hagroma. So therefore, if you had stopped, it might have been okay. But if you're magrim, it's not okay. Why? Once you got to the rov mark, it's more than 50%, it's a kosher shechita. Anything that you do afterwards is irrelevant. So as long as I can see that you've done the rov, by looking at rov of the taba'at, then you did rov of the shechita and the mokum shechita, you can't do a hagroma after you've completed the shechita. Rav and Shmuel, the Amr Tavaya, says the Gemara, both Rav and Shmuel agreed that the halach is like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. You do not need al pnei kula. However, af Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda lo amar ela betabat hagdola ho lamakefet et kol hakon. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda only said this ruling when it came to the tabat hagdola, because the tabat hagdola actually goes around the entire kona. Now, there's many different ways of learning this. One way is the shiur of rov is only a function of the tabat, where the tabat itself covers the entire kona. But if the tabat doesn't cover the entire kona, how in the world would you measure the rov based on the tabat? You'd have to look at the lumen of the cut area of the kona itself. And the tabat per se would be irrelevant. Now, if that's what it means, then it's a simple statement about how to measure the rov. So where you come to the tabat hagdola, being as there is no separately identifiable kona, there is entirely a cartilage which has a lining, which I'm calling that lining the kana. There, the tabat is viewed as an extension of the kana. It's all one thing. But if the tabat is just sort of clipped on with connective tissue on the back, that's how we're going to look at it, so then you can't measure by measuring the tabat. You have to measure the actual kana. Rashi's approach to the sugya is that a kana is only a kana where it's not partially cartilage and partially kana. And we don't call those semi-rings, they're neither kana, they're nothing when it comes to a windpipe. So if you check them, you haven't checked the kana. Amazing assertion. Because the din of rov cannot turn a cartilage piece into kana. And since essentially these pieces are interruptions in the kana, the cartilage is interruptions to the kana, the Torah never said you can cut cartilage. It said you can cut kana. And therefore, if you're talking about the tabat hagdola, where something is complete, where it's complete, then it becomes part of the definition of kana. Since it's makefet et kol hakana. Avo bishar tabaot, the other tabaot, what are you going to say? They cover rov of the kana, and therefore, a rov is kakulo. A rov is kakulo in terms of a shiur. A rov is not kakulo in terms of a definition. So you're not going to say, well, since it's rov, you might as well call the whole thing kana. That's absurd. It's cartilage. And therefore, you will not be yotzi your shechita there at all. Tainas Rav and Shmuel. So bishar hatabaot lo. Now, as Rashi points out, look, there's plenty of other perushim. He gives some of the perushim, doesn't like them. And he says, bottom line, we don't paskin like this anyway. So nothing is so bad if you learn it like I'm telling you anyway. Because it's not going to be no gala halacha. Okay. So.
How much space is there?
You could see yourself in the picture. And mine shows them lined up and mine.
Well,
here's a real picture. This is not a schematic. This is a real picture. Obviously, it depends how much it's stretched. Now, that's the whole point, is the cutting. It really is like a dryer tube. It's meant to stretch. So if it's been cut, and it's all that looks close together, so if it's stretched, actually, the Gemara is going to discuss stretching effects later on, because the stretching effect also pulls the kana out of the lung. In other words, if this animal's head is pulled upward, then this piece of what we call kana that's surrounded by lung is really not going to be surrounded by lung. It's going to be pulled up, and the lung is going to be left behind. So there, it's going to be very nogea. Which part is lung, and which part is kana? So it's hard to tell. I mean, if that picture may be a schematic of a kona that's completely at rest. The same thing, by the way, is your dryer tube. You take your dryer vent. If you just leave it and it comes in the box, it's all together. If you pull it out so that it stretches to the exit, you know.
If this was a lot, then sure we have to carefully pull out and find the spot within the boat.
He'd have to feel it, or he could check in the Tabat Agdolah. We have no problem.
Through the
card? Yeah. Well, generally the case anyway. Yeah. Good. Yes, the Gemara. What? This is what Ravin Shmuel said that? You're telling me Bishah Taba'od lo? You can't shecht in the other Taba'od? But Tanya, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, HaShulchet Bishar HaTaba'od, you shechted the Kana, the robe of the Kana, Afo Pishe Ein Makifot et Kol HaKana, Holo Makifot et Rov HaKana, Shetotok Sheira. I mean, you couldn't say it any more clearly that Ruba is Kekula, even to define this as a Mokum that's Kosher L'Shkita, despite he's speaking out clearly. Don't believe what Rav and Shmuel are saying. I said, I never said it, even though there is no Rov, there is no Kula, a Rov is sufficient to define this as a Mokum Shkita. I mean, that's pretty darn clear. Then there's also, by the way, a mugremet psula. Now, that's a separate statement. That is just telling you that if you have rov betocha taba and miut lamala from any of the taba, meaning above the taba tagdola, that would be puzzle, which of course is not true. This is going back to the Tanakhama. This is like not the conclusion of Rav Sibur Rav Yehuda, but rather it's the statement of the Tanakhama of our Mishargu on Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda. So Mugranet still is a different thing. Hayid Rabbi Chanina ben Atignus, no, that's not true. That, what you are calling a mugremet, is not mugremet. That is completely kosher. I don't care if you shecht it entirely out of the Tabat HaGdolah. You could shecht even in the larynx. Be no problem. Now, how far up Rabbi Chanina ben Atignus is ready to redefine what we thought, because this is Hayid. Hayid means this is the way he was makabal as a halacha that was given over generation to generation, that what we're saying is not really the definition of a grammat. That's what he's saying. What you're calling a grammat, that's totally kosher. I'm not interested, rov, kulo, because that has nothing to do with mugremet. Even lamala from the entire Tabat HaGdolah is not considered to be a problem of mugremet. Om Rav Yosef, yeah, look, you're right. Obviously, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda is saying, pay no attention to Rav and Shmuel. There's no question. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda himself clearly made two separate statements. Tartika Omar. First of all, he was saying that there's a din of rov in terms of shkita, and once you've done rov of the shkita, anything beyond that couldn't possibly be a mugremet because you're cutting basar. And he also said another statement that if you have a tabat that covers rov of the kana, then that is considered to be a makam shkita. It's just that Rav and Shmuel didn't agree with him about that. So they said halacha Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, meaning that once you did rov of the shkita, rov of the simen, that's the entire shkita. Anything beyond that is cutting a piece of meat. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's other psak that you're allowed to shecht within a tabat because that's considered to be a kana, we disagree with. Rav Shmuel Sabagavad Bechoda Pelag Bechoda. Es Gemara Vohalo Amarka Amri. Wasn't the language that Rav Shmuel said? Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda himself never said about the Shara Tabaot, and here Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says very clearly, I do say about Shara Tabaot. Hokikama, what they meant was, halacha kimoto b'tabat HaGdolah, meaning he didn't say it, meaning you can ignore him. He didn't say anything meaningful. That's what they meant. So afhu lo amar, even though we're possibly like it, but don't take him seriously when it comes to the other thing. That's completely wrong. Well, he's right about saying, which has nothing to do with it, the two issues are completely disassociated. He's right to say, once you finish your shkita, you can't do a hagrama. But he's wrong to say that rov is enough to define an area as a makom shkita. Ein halacha kamoto b'shara tabaot. Kisolik Rabbi Zera. When Rabbi Zera came to Eretz Yisrael, ochal mugremet the Rav and Shmuel, he ate shkita that had been done b'shara tabaot, which according to Rav and Shmuel is a different form of mugremet, because every time you go from the area of the kana into the tabat, you're in a place that's like kosher l'shchita. So the mokum shchita is surrounded, each piece is surrounded by a place to do hagrama. Above the tabat hagdola, and then going all the way down, every single tabat is a mokum of hagrama. Amri like, so they asked Rabbi Zera, don't you come from Bovel, which is where they paskin like Rav and Shmuel? And don't you have to be Machmer, like the place where you came from? Amarlu said, whoever said that Rav and Shmuel said that? That was quoted by Rav Yosef. Yosef Barchia? Can't trust him for anything. Yosef Barchia Mikulei Almagomer is naive. People tell him things and he says it over, like these Hasidus Shemaisim, Rabbi Yashiv said. Did you ever hear Rav and Shmuel say such a thing? Never. Now, Rav Yosef heard that. I heard that. Shomer Rav Yosef Ikvid, he was rather upset about that. What? Anami Kulei Alma Gamirna? I listen to everybody. Like, heck, Anami Rav Yehuda Gamirna. I don't quote things I haven't learned from Rav Yehuda. And I want you to know that Rav Yehuda is so careful that if he'll quote Rav or Shmuel, or Rav and Shmuel Dami Tavayu, you can be absolutely certain that he knows exactly what he's talking about, because if not, he even says so. Afilus Feket Agavregar. When he says over something that somebody said to him, he will retain the doubt when he quotes it. For instance, Tomer Rav Yehuda, Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba says, but Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba really couldn't be sure, Suffolk Mishmei de Rav, Suffolk Mishmei de Shmuel, that if you have three people who are not mumchen, they're just regular guys at Yotot, you can have three people that would be matir a bechor based on an obvious mum, b'mokum she'ein mumchen, okay? Now's not the point to discuss that halacha. I'm just pointing out to you that Rav Yehuda is so careful that if he told me that Rav and Shmuel Amar Tavayu, there was no doubt in it. So don't say, oh, he learns from everybody. So basically, Rav and Shmuel can be guaranteed to have said what I said. Okay, but I mean, bottom line is, Lamaisa, what's the difference if Rav and Shmuel said it or not? In that makom, in Bavel, people were knowing that way. If Rabbi Zera is coming from Bavel, so doesn't he have to keep the chumres of Bavel? Rabbi Zera let le not nimalav chumrei amakom sheyatzah misham v'chumrei amakom shealach lesham. I don't understand. He doesn't hold of the Mishnah. I mean, it's a halacha that everybody accepts that you are mechuyev to act according to the chumres of the place where you came from. So how could he possibly be mekel when it comes to erev Pesach? Whether you're allowed to do malacha? There, the Mishnah describes the question of, even if you're in a place where there are no iglakula, if you come from a place where people don't do malach after chatzos, then you're not allowed to. Says the Gemara, that's only true if you're going from one town in Chutz Laretz to another town in Chutz Laretz, or if you're going from one town in Eretz Yisrael to another town in Eretz Yisrael. So I'm going to be Bavel to Bavel, Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, or if you're going from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel also, because if you're coming to a place where they're Mekel and you're coming from Eretz Yisrael, you're going to have to keep this more chomer minig of Eretz Yisrael. But if you are going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you can effectively ignore any chumras of Chutz Laretz. Because given the anan kaifinan lahu, avina kavatayu, since we are totally dependent in so many halakas when it comes to the dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur Shana, when it comes to dinim knosses where there's no smicha in Bavel, and so many things which we can't even do on our own without the Bezdin and Eretz Yisrael. So we're completely subsumed by their menhagim as well. And avdina kavatayu, we do what they do. And therefore, Rabbi Zera held, he can effectively forget about Bavel. Ravashi Omar has nothing to do with that. Afilu temi b'Bavel Eretz Yisrael. Even if you want to tell me that you do have to keep the chumras of Chutz Laretz, that's hanimili echad adad to lachazor. It's only if you intend to go back to Chutz Laretz. Once you've left, what's the difference where you once lived? You are now a ben Eretz Yisrael. So if it's not that to lachazor, and in fact, Rabbi Zera ain't that to lachazor habit, he never intends to go back, and because of that, he didn't have to keep that halacha. Amalei Abaya L'Rav Yosef. This is very strange because there were Rabbanan that came from Mechuza. Mechuza is a town in Bavel. And you're all talking over here that everybody has this minhag in Bavel. All I know is that they quoted Reb Nachman, it should say. They quoted Reb Nachman as saying that mugremet that everybody says about Rav and Shmuel, about in the Taba'ot, that was actually kosher. And this is in Bavel. So they said mugremet is Shira, or Marle, you know, rivers have a tendency to break up. That's Nara Naru Pashta. You start off with one river, and then as it goes down, its tributaries split. Every tributary develops different life forms at the end. You know, you've got these little islands in which people believe Mugramet is defined by the Kana. There's different minogam. What are you asking? There's no such thing as a monolithic Bavel. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Achsha b'chuda dekuva. Reish Lakish was matir even all the way at the tippy top of the larynx, which is way above, as we saw in the picture, way above that bottom piece where the cartilage was of the Tabat HaGdola. And that was kosher too, he said, because once we're paskening, like Rabbi Hanina ben Antignus is a dut that it has nothing to do with the Tabat HaGdola, goes all the way up to there, said Rabbi Yochanan. Oh my goodness, Gisa, that could mean dear brother-in-law, which is highly unlikely, but but it could, no, someone, that's what it means. But it also means, oh, now you've gone too far. Whoa, that is gas. That is just, you know, gross. You've really done it this time. I mean, it's one thing to say above the Tabat HaGdola, but to say go all the way up to the tippy top of the cone-like structure, which is the top of the larynx, as it enters into the pharynx. No, that's gone too far. And we'll get into the details of that tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. Omer Avuna Barav Katina, Omer Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Shalosh Pegimote. Pegimat Etzim et Pesach, Pegimat Ozen Bivchor, Pegimat Mum Bekodashim. Rav Kista Omer, Af Pegimat Sakin, Ve'idach Bechulen Lo Kamayri, Ve'kulan Pegimatam, Kedei Pegimat HaMizbeah. Ve'kamak Pegimat HaMizbeah, Kedei Shetach Korba Tziporin. Meitvei, Kama Pegimat HaMizbeah, Shemin Yochai, Omer Tefach, Rav Elozer ben Yaakov, Omer Kizayit, no, Kasha. Habesida, Habavna, and the Torah said Avanim Shlemot. Omravuna, I tafka, the losar sakina kamechokam, it's a heck of a chutzpah, and mishamtinanle. Rav Amar, forget about the chutzpah. Mavarinanle, machrezina na bisfe de trefe, the lo plige. Obviously, it depends whether the meat was trefe. Kam beshinim tseit sakino yafa, kam beshin lonim tseit sakino yafa. Ravina Amar, hech lonim tseit sakino yafa, you kidding? What about Saba? On the contrary, Shlichoteka Avdina. Omer Rabba Baravuna, Shein Telusha, Vetziporan Telusha, Mutar Lishchot Palachatchila. What? And that's not Chutz B'Mago Kotzir, V'Megirava Shneim Vetziporan, which are even possibly Avad, V'Lishir Chunkin. Yeah, that Shneim, Shein Hashem Lokasha, Ha'Bechoda Betarte, and even Tziporan Tziporan Lokasha, Ha'Betlusha, Ha'Bemechuberet. Hashukhet b'magal katsir b'derech halichata, b'et shamay poslin u'b'et hila makshirin, v'im echeliku shineha, areo kesakin. On Rebchia Barava Amar Rabbi Yochanan, av kishi echshiro b'et hilel, lo echshiro el letahara midei nevela, avo b'achila asura. On Rebashi, yep, tekanami, diktoni b'et shamay poslin, u'b'et hila makshirin, lo katoni b'et shamay osrin, u'b'et hila matirin, so that it leaves no ambivalence here at all as to the meaning. It's perfectly logical to say it's chalamil tehin. Hashochet mitoch atabat, v'shiyer ba mlo achut, al pnei kula, shchita tokshira. Reviz, revira, omer, what do you know, pnei kula? Even mlo achut al pnei ruba, because once you've done that, you did the full Heter Shkita. Rav Shmuel d'Amrit Tarvayo halachak Rabbi Yezir Rabbi Yehuda. But don't make any mistakes. Up for Rabbi Yezir Rabbi Yehuda lo amar ela b'tabat ha'gdola ho'il ma'kefet et kol ha'kana. Avo b'shara taba'ot, you're not going to say Rov creates a makam Shkita, Rashi understands it. B'shara taba'ot lo? V'tanya Rabbi Yezir Rabbi Yehuda omer ha'shochit b'shara taba'ot Afal pi, she ain't makifot et kol hakana,
And the Rabbanan point out that a mugremet would be psula, whereas Heid Reb Chanina ben Atignas, nah, a mugremet is entirely kshira by your definitions. Amar Reb Yosef, well, of course, Reb Yosef Reb Yehuda himself, tarte ka amar. It's just that Rav and Shmuel Savrik avate bechoda, upligi ale bechoda. But they said he never said it. Hello, Omar, quote, unquote, ka'amre. Now, what they were saying was, he might as well not have said it, because it isn't true. In other words, he didn't say anything meaningful. Halakha kamoto only, b'taba'at ha'gedola, in halakha kamoto b'shara taba'ut. Kisolik Rabbi Zera, ochal mukremet, the Rav and Shmuel, once he was in Eretz Yisrael. So they asked him, don't you come from Bavel, mi'atri the Rav and Shmuelat? Omar lo, who believes that? Man Amra Yosef Achia. Yosef Achia is a naive guy. Mikulei Alma Gamir. Shomer of Yosef Yigbara. Ana Mikulei Alma Gamirna. Ana Mir of Yuda Gamirna. I feel the Sveikid Agavri Goris. Dom Revirom Revirme Barab, Sophic Bishmeda Rab, Sophic Bishmeda Shmuel, Shlosh Shamatirin Tabachom Mogabshain Mumcha. Wait a minute. But besides all of that, who cares what the halacha is? Doesn't Rabbi Zera hold no inalav chumrei makom sheyatzami sham chumrei makom shalach l'sham? Amar Abaye, well, of course, but hani milim mibavel abavel or meretz Yisrael, or even from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. But from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to keep Bavel minhagim because kivat anan kafinan lahu afina kavatayu. Rav Ashi Amar, not necessarily. Even if normally you would have to be machmer and be bavel Eretz Yisrael, it's only where hanimile yekad da'ato lachzor. But Rabbi Zera ain't da'ato lachzor avi. Amalei Abayel Rav Yosef, I don't get this business about bavel. Didn't the Rabbanu tell us that Lamaisa, they said beferish, and Rav Nachman was like the top of the top over there in terms of the peskin, and it was Rav Nachman who said that a mugremes is kshera. Amalei, look, it's not monolithic. Nahara naharu pashte. Reb Shimon ben Lakish Achshir, even all the way up to the Kuva. Korale Rabbi Yochanan, whoa. Gisa.
That was the recording from the 12th cycle, today's Daf Yomi. Here is the recording of the previous cycle, cycle number 11 of the equivalent Daf. Quite a different ambience, quite a different attendance. You may like to review the Daf with it, or perhaps use it as your actual initial learning. Enjoy.
Okay, so we're holding today on the bottom of the Yud Zayin on the base. Omer of Huna Barab Katina, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish, three lines up. Shalosh Pegimotin. We have three areas in which there's a bit of Pegima. Pegimat Etzem Bethesda. There's an Isser of creating a Pegima in the Etzem of a Pesach to be over on the Isser of Etzem Lotish Berubo. Even a Pegima is considered to be Lotish Berubo. Pegimas Ozen. We know that we have to have a pagam of a mum of some kind in a bechor in order to allow its shchita as a balmum. Otherwise, it has to be brought on the mizbeach. And of course, it wouldn't be able to use it. Bizman hazeh. Once it gets a mum, then a kohen can shecht it and keep it for himself. But one of those mumim is an ozen with the cartilage was nifkam, and there too the din is pegima. So the same concept of pegima, and we'll see that they all have the same shear. And besides that, you also have now a pegima of general munin bekotchen. Now, this is a little strange because, lechora, you would say, isn't that included? I mean, the din of a mum on a bechora is no different than mum on other kotchen. So the explanation over here is that bechora, by definition, is a zohar. The Zohar does not have the same organs as a Nekeva. And there's a bit of Pegimas that are applied to a Nekeva, which do not apply to a male at all. It involves the vagina, the uterus, and so the outside areas of the uterus. So There, we need to explain that over there, we also have a din of pegima. The question is, why don't we do it the other way? In other words, if we give a general din of pegima b'kotshim, you would think that that would include b'chor, because b'chor is also kedesh. So Rashi says the reason that we wouldn't have thought that if we would have just said pegam b'kotshim is because I would have thought that in order to shecht a b'chor, you need to have something that is is nicker. And this is a pegima, we'll see, is a pegima the way you just saw in the sakin. This is Kadesh Tachbar, but Sipurim. It's not.
Pegima of Ozen would not.
Would be very small. Yeah. Yes, yeah, of course it would apply to Kotchim. Yeah, sure it would. But that wouldn't tell us much about pegamim that are in the cave if we went on and said pegam with a b'chor. So the point is, if I had only said it by b'chor, then I would have thought that there's a different halacha to pasul something from kodesh to bring on the mizbeach, and on the other hand to be matir to shecht outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So we have two issues over here: the extent to which it's nikar, and the difference between being matir according to shecht, which we'll see, we're very machped on, because we don't really trust Kohanim. We're afraid that they'll make a little movement and then so we need something that's
very, and
then keep it for themselves. So you would have thought that there's a difference. So when it comes, okay, to pasul from the mizbeach, let's say just for the shecht question, is it pasul from the mizbeach? I understand sufficient pasul from the mizbeach. To be matir to shecht already, that you go to the Kohen, you need something that's a little bit more nicker. And you need a movement that you got off. And if it would have said the other way around, it would have said, okay, an ozen is something that's very noticeable. The pegima and the keva is not very noticeable. Maybe over there needs to be something that needs to be more significant. So there's a reason to say it in this particular way. Now, all of these pegima is from the apegima sakin. The priest said, I don't know why you're leaving out our sugya, which is the pegima and the sakin. And the reason that Reish Lakish didn't want to say the pegima sakin is because he's not talking about chulin. B'chulin lo kamare, he's talking about dafka inyanim of kachin. Of course, this goes back to the general question whether sakin is an issue of chulin or kachin. This way we have to say chulin things that apply even to chulin lo kamare. I'm talking about uniquely kachin things. The chulan in all of the above, the gimatan kedei pegimat hamizbeach, the shear that we use is pegimas hamizbeach. Pegimas hamizbeach with the teres is beferish avanim shilemot, that the stones have to be completely whole. And how much is that? V'kama pegimat hamizbeach kedei shetachgorba tziporim. The shear is tiny. It's so that even if it would catch your finger, it's already possible. And this is why the Gemara says the only real way you can build a mizbeach in order to avoid pegimas is you have to use stones that were shaped by water. Because otherwise you'll have some kind of pegima. Because you're not allowed to use metal to file it. The shamir isn't smoothing up so that you can't be pegging tzibarim. So what would make something so smooth? If you recall the Gemara in Zvachim, it said if you collected basically gravel, which are the small stones, which are completely rounded and smooth by the action of water over a long time, and then they built those malbanim, put in those stones together with concrete, and then the mizbeach was built of them. But in Okinami, you don't have a particular Eben Mamish that would be built. Tosfos has some problems with this because of the various mashmoniyot that the Mizbeach was in fact, they used the Shamir to make the Mizbeach, and how we would ever get a case of Beginas and Mizbeach, and the non-pogum Mizbeach in that case. Now, best the Gemara, this really doesn't seem to make sense because Mesa Kama Beginas and Mizbeach. We have the brisa that says the shear of pegimas and mizbeach is my focus. Rishim by Yechai says the tefach. My gosh, tefach is about a million kedei shetachro b'tziporim. And the laws of Ben Yaakov and the kizai is certainly not tachro b'tziporim. So what's the pshat? Lo kasha habesida ad ha'avna. Wait. There's two issues over here. There's the avonim of the mizbeach. They have to be shleimis. That's where it says avonim shleimis.
Then we have another halacha, which is the seed with which we cover the mizbeah. So it's like a whitewash, a line. Over there, there's no be'etz and din that it has to be shalim. So that in order, it shouldn't be near a chaser. The shear would be a kezayis or perhaps a tefa, which gets a much bigger kula, of course. In the case that a shertet shechs without showing his knife to the chacham, we've already seen that we made a takonet because of the covet of the chacham, you have to show the knife at the beginning of the day to the chacham at you. So mishamtina, like we put him into chayim. The Rava says, put him into chayim, that's nothing. We throw him out of his position. We also make an announcement that anything that he has to sell is trade. You're not allowed to eat it. The truth is that Rav Huna and Rav are not arguing. It depends if ex post facto the knife turned out to be okay. If it turned out to be okay, all right, so then we'll be manada him because it didn't cover the Rav. That's Stam Aloch, he wasn't Mechabe de Chokha. The din is that you're Menada, someone who doesn't show proper respect. But if he really ended up using a non-kosher knife, then we've got a real problem. We want people to avoid utilizing his meat. So there were machers that he's not a kosher shoka anymore, we throw him out of his position, and so on. Now, not everybody agrees with this, because Ravina says, no, Ekron into Sakina Yoka. On the contrary, Rava's case, where we're mockers that the meat is trade, is talking about where the knife was kosher. If the knife was found not to be kosher, you take his meat, and the master slave apart, and throw it into the dung, make it absolutely filthy, that feel other to call him not in his dung, shouldn't be able to sell it even for a guy. And this is a knot, we want him to lose his investment.
So the choice is the butcher?
Yeah, generally. It wasn't so much specialization once upon a time. The lawyer and the accountant were once the same man. Parta is a not nice word for dung. There was a particular tabak who in Rabba Bar Hanina's territory hadn't showed him the sake. So Rabba Bar Hanina shamte, he was menadehim, ve'avre, basically like Rabba. And he was mavir him from his position. The akra is abisre the trefer. He went and he was mavir, it's trefer meat and so on. So in other words, he held, without looking at the knife, that under the best conditions, he would like Ravina time, and under the best conditions, we were going to make sure that he ain't going to sell any meat again to a Jew. So he treated it without. In other words, if the sacking was not kosher, it was even worse. Anyway, Marzutra and Ravashi came to visit him. Oh, so they were sitting by Mikbu Marzutra, Ravashi, because he was very upset about the need to do this to this butcher. But he held that, you know, that's what you should do. But he said to them, La'aynu rabbanan b'milsay, try to figure out how to get this guy out of this position in which he lost his job. The Tolebei Tafle, he has a lot of dependents, he has a big family, doesn't have a job. If there's some way you can figure out that we don't have to fire him, please do so. Both Ravashi was sakine. So Ravashi went and checked his knife, and he found that the knife was kosher. Nimtzei yafa. The akshere, and on that basis, he was makshir this tabak. So in other words, what he said was, let's be samer on the original shot that we had, and that being what would look like a machlokas was not a machlokas, and that Rava was talking about where the nimtzei sakina lo yafa. So if the sacking was no good, fine, then obviously we'll have to be ma'abir him. But in this case, Nimtzei Sakina Yafa, so we remember not him of the truva, he'll have his position, everything will be fine. Omalei Marzutra, so Marzutra said to Ravashi, I mean, isn't this like a slap in the face of of Rabbi Bar Chinuna. Rabbi Bar Chinuna, I mean, the reason that we did, Rabbi Bar Chinuna did it, he apparently held that the halacha is that you have to do as a minimum, you have to get rid of him and fire him. And it's all the chvayda, and now you're going to go and you're going to undo the covet of the Rav. So, we have an old Talmud Chacham here, we shouldn't give him covet. On the contrary, why do you think he asked us to go? Because he wanted us to be semech on our God if we could find a head there. He himself apparently held strong grounds to be masman like Ravina, but he didn't want to take it upon himself. I mean, he said, he's Dafka asked us, but he couldn't figure this out himself. But Dafka asked us to do what we would have done. So we don't have to go ask him permission. That's why he appointed us. Omar Rabba Bahuna, Tanid Rabba Baravuna, a shame to Lusha, the Tziporen to Lusha Mutar Lishotba. You can use a tooth, as long as it's not in a live body, and you can use a nail, as long as it's not part of a live body, you can use it to shechlet. And that's even a chatzilah. What? The Persian Mishnahs are not like that. Our Mishnah said, Anansnan, Chutz Mimagal Katsir, Vahamagira, Vahashinayim Vatsiporim. Persian Mishnahs. But Neshen Chunkim. So, what's the problem? Shein Hashem Mokasha. First of all, you'll notice, I said Shein, and the Mishnah says Shinayim. Okay? It's a big difference. One tooth, what's the problem with using a tooth? I don't understand. Which is ivory, an ivory knife is not kosher all of a sudden. Coca-Cola bottles are kosher, but ivory isn't kosher. There's nothing wrong with using a tooth. The problem was to use a jar that was holding two teeth in it. So you're holding the jar shafting, then you have a pagima by definition. There's always a slight gap between the tooth. So over there you'll have a problem in the socking, that's all. And so hobakoda hobatarata. Tzipor not tzipor in lokasha. When it talks about a nail, this is generally referring to a balkai's nail, you know, a large nail. Not that it would make a difference. So lokasha betlusha b'mekubaris. It depends. If the nail is not attached to the body, so it is perfectly kosher. It's not worse than a Coke bottle. When the Mishnah was saying that, it was possible. It was talking about, and mekubaris obviously could have said the same thing with shame. There's nothing, but Shein, as Tosis points out, we have the beard. It's a Shinayim. There's a Shinayim. He said, it's a simple answer. But here too, I specified that when can you use a nail, even the chatzila, when it's not attached. If it's attached, then you have a different problem. You have the problem of mechubar.
Is
it a dead body? Once it's turned into meat, it doesn't matter how much else is attached to it. It's a jar, a head, or the rest. Hashochet b'magal katsir b'derech halichata b'chamei poslim u'bekilo machshiri. Now, as we saw before, the Mishnah said chutz b'magal katsir. So, magal yad. The issue with the magal yad, you remember, one side of the magal yad was smooth and had no problems with the gimos. The other side of the magal yad is serrated. Okay, over there we don't want to use the smooth side, because what happens if you use the serrated side? But a magal katsir has got another problem. Both sides are serrated. Ah, so what's the shaila? I mean, so then, of course, it's possible. Not necessarily. Because you see, this is something we did not discuss yesterday. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened to that piece of paper with my beautiful drawing. It's gone, that beautiful piece of paper. I gave it to you and you left it. You took it home. That's what I mean, you left it home. All right, so anyway, if we have another piece of paper, somebody had a piece of paper, no? What we talked about yesterday was an ogeret, which we had on both sides. We had a place in which if the knife was pulled across the neck, it would tear on either end. It's not Nogea the knife.
No.
Okay, then we had a Misuch Sechet.
It would tear either end of the knife?
It would tear on either end of the hole. Please step up. We did this yesterday. So if you're drawing a knife across, as the flesh falls into this little hole, it's torn here. And as it's pulled out, it's torn there. And the success catches. Once it catches, it serves. As it goes down here, there's no problem. It's not going to tear on anything. There's no sharp edge. But as it hits this, it catches on the edge here, it'll tear here. Now, what this would mean, you would think, is that a knife, and this is what we said yesterday, a knife that's serrated, once it has two begimais, even if both of them are mesuch zachot, then it would be possible, because the first one is going to be possible.
Well, you have weapons there.
Rich, I'm getting worried about you. You know, Hashem Yishmor said one of the people in here that started doing that ended up never waking up. I'm not kidding. I'm really getting worried. I don't know. What's so funny? There we go. That should keep you up. Having that.
I thought we were going to hang out over the
door. Is it
damage? This is a cow back.
Hang out over the door.
It's a biggie, right?
Yeah,
it's a big animal.
Okay. Now, according to the sigil we learned yesterday, if you draw a knife, even if it's mesuch zachot, if it has two pegimas in it, by the time you get to the second pegima, it's going to tear the simani.
If it's in the same direction, why should it do that?
Because it hits here.
But if it's going in the opposite
then
direction.
Then it hits here on the way down. Either way. It tears on the way down, it tears on the way up.
Yes, it is two.
Yeah. If there's two, then the first one will tear the skin, and the second one will tear the simani. Right? So the chora, there's no way to use a knife that has more than one pegima. You can only use a knife with a b'diavad, if you had a pegima all the way in the tip of the knife, so if the knife hasn't cut anything yet. Plus, it's only a pegima that has one end, it's mitzvah tzedakah, not two ends, then you could say it's kosher. A mago kosher, which is entirely serrated in this fashion, meaning that it only has one edge, l'chora is impossible to use. And yet, the Gemara, the Mishnah says all the year, that according to Beis Hillel, if you use a mago kotzer, which is completely serrated, it would be kosher. Now, how is that possible? And so, we have yet a third level of sakin that we have not discussed, in which you have the edge, which is sharp, turned over in such a way that it catches, mago kotzer will catch wheat, will catch tfua, and pull at it. And what it does is, therefore, it's made in such a way that the pegimos go something like that. Okay? So the dispense, in other words, it comes over, it's very kofut in one direction, right? It'll catch a piece of straw in here, and that's how it rips at it. So it's very, very good at that. But it's useless in terms of the serration for cutting flesh, because if I go this way, I don't fall into here. I just come up. Okay? Right. And if I go this way, but the truth is if I go this way, I'm going to get cut on this edge. But if I go this way, I just fall into here and come back up again. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anything that's going to cut me because it's very coupled. The edge is bent downwards. And unless I pull back in this direction and I get caught at this, nothing's going to happen.
There's a pause, though, isn't it?
Pardon me?
Why is it?
There's a pause, though, and then cutting, so that doesn't matter.
Why is there a pause? Oh, I just move the knife, I can, and I do this again and again. Right? It keeps going. Here's a large, here's a, you know, here's
a
knife.
There's a second way it's not cutting, so it's pause.
That doesn't matter, no.
Why is that so much different than this?
But this one cuts on the
it
here.
It cuts on the pulling down side? It'll
both directions. Okay, so this is called kafuf ma'od or kafuf yotzer, and there it's only going to cut in one direction. It's only going to hurt it in one direction. Cut, but it'll only catch in one direction. Now the shaila is, this is a lot worse than a mago yad, because a mago yad, only if I use the wrong blade, I use the wrong side of the blade, am I going to have a problem. Over here, if I move it in the other direction, which I'm used to doing, I move the knife back and forth. So every year I come along and I say, well, I'm only going to go in this direction. So if I can't do this on a field. It's much worse than the Magrayan situation. But what if I did do it? And I know that I only went in the direction in which it's not going to catch the boss. So here we have a machlokas in our Mishnah between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai poslim, u Beit Hillel machshirim. Now, im hichliku shineha, aleo kisakim. There's nothing that will say that something that was once serrated, if I can make sure that nothing is going to catch on it, that it's going to be possible, because then it becomes basically an ola v'yoy. Like we had yesterday. A sakina is very uneven, but it goes up and it goes down smoothly. As long as it goes up and down smoothly, there's no halakha that a sakina has to be straight. There's only halakha that a sakina cannot catch. So if you start off with a magro kutzer and you want to smooth down these edges, that's fine.
They said they're sharp but very angled, so it only fall, wouldn't catch going forwards.
No, that's not true.
No,
why wouldn't they? They're not showing the tifa.
No, but when it went forward.
No, that doesn't matter. It's not kofel. That's not good. Fine. So. Omer Tzir Barav, Omer Yochanan, after she yekshiru Beit Hillel, lo yekshiru ala the Tzahara midei nevela. When Beit Hillel was makshir, don't think that he means you can eat it. He was just saying that, look, the animal is kosher, therefore it's not an nevela. However, b'achilah asura, we certainly asur the person from eating this type of shrita, because we are afraid that then people will come to use this and move the knife in the other direction. If they move the knife in the other direction, it's all over. Omer Avashi, Dekanami Diktani, Beit Shammai Poslim, Beit Hillel Machshirim. Note the language of the Mishnah. Why doesn't it say that Beit Shammai Osrim, Beit Hillel Matirim? Why are you saying this lotion over here of Hechsher? Psul. If you want to talk about eating something, you talk about being matured. Apparently, Beit Hillel is not matured. You say that on some level, the shvita is a valid act of shvita. So I'm not going to be matured for you. Because Meikar Hadin is kosher, Rabbanan answered it. That's not any kind of raya, because, I mean, if you're right, let me ask you something. If the whole question over here is it an avela or not, and you want to make sure that nobody makes the mistake of thinking that it's kosher to eat, what's the language that you ought to use? Mitamin and mitari? That way we take it out of the tchum of heterochila totally. So according to you, why doesn't it say Beit Shammai mitamin as an avela, and Beit Hillel mitari as an avela? That way nobody's going to make a mistake to think that it means you can eat it. So clearly, when we use the language of machshir, patzel, all that we're doing is we're talking about the act of shvita. Is the act of shvita a kosher act of shvita or not a kosher act of shvita? It's left open to determine what that means. Yes, it could mean lagabe achio also. You can't bring a riot from it. It could mean only lagabe tumen l'taira. But we're not addressing its status in terms of how you're going to be nenefah b'shvita. On what level, whether it's in terms of tomb of the tire, whether it's in terms of heter achila, we're discussing the act of shechita. Therefore, for the time, and according to the way you understand it, that the issue over here is to make it clear that there's no heter achila, isn't there a better way to make that clear? Lisnei Beit Shammai mitaminu Beit Hillel mitaharim. Ella, therefore, your diak is not a good diak. Obviously, I can't disprove it. Reb Chiya Bar Abba quotes Reb Yochanan. Reb Yochanan had this pickup over from his Rebbe. But I'm just pointing out to you, don't try to bring riot from the Mishnah. Because it's easy to say that Poslinu Makshirin and Asrinu Matirin is all the same thing, quite a mil thing. One refers to the act, and one refers to what the act achieves. But you can't bring a riot of what the act achieves is heter. In terms of achilo, you can't bring a riot of what the act achieves is only to be mitired in day to day. So let's forget about bringing a riot. Ashochet mitoch hatabat v'shiyerba melo hachut alpikula shritato kshira. Now we're heading on now to the next psul of shrita. I shouldn't really say next psul of shrita, because remember that not everyone is agreed that the psul that we've just been talking about is a psul in shrita per se. Is it one of the five psulim of shvita? Remember, that was machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi understands the problem of sakinim not to be examples of ikur, but simply to be again because it's chonek. It's simply not an act of shvita. That's not what the word to be shogeg means, to draw a knife and to cut. It's to do something else. So we haven't even begun talking about the psulim in shvita per se, the five psulim of shvita, according to Rashi. One of the pshatim that Tosfos brought earlier, this is a problem actually that's included under the ikur din. But now we're definitely beginning to talk about the five psulim, and the first thing we're going to discuss here is the din of hagrama. So what was that halacha, that there's a particular area that is kosher for shvita? If you're magrim, if you turn the knife outside of that area, then you're not shechting in the right place. We understand you can't shecht an animal through its lungs. You have to shecht the kana and the veshet. But the kana and the veshet is a little ambiguous, because at the bottom, towards the lungs and towards the stomach, there's a point at which it's no longer kana, it's already stomach on some level. There's a point at which it's already lung on some level. It's a point at which it's no longer veshet, it's already stomach on some level. That we'll discuss later. Right now we're talking about, how about towards the top? Now, towards the top, there's a point at which we're talking about a jaw, or we're talking about what we like to call a voice box in colloquialisms. And there's a point at which we're talking about a corner, we're talking about a veshet. We're talking here at the top, closer to the head. What is considered to be hagrama? Now, the first thing to note is that when we're dealing with the kana, we're talking about a tube that looks very much like those dryer tubes that take those plastic dryer tubes that are used to bring the air outside, where you have basically a membrane, which is the plastic, and inside that membrane, there are these rings. And these rings give it its lumen. It keeps the lumen open so that the air will escape. In the case of the kana, we have exactly the same situation. There, the rings are made out of cartilage, and the lining, plus, we'll talk about also there's a membrane that we need to discuss separately. The lining above and below, this is it's like a plastic. It's a membrane, and it looks very much like a dryer tube. And we'll look at the picture in a moment, I guess, we can find it here. Because I only see the top. I'm sure they have the whole thing. I never had a chance to look at this thing. In any event, each ring is called a ring, believe it or not. How do you like that? It's called the tabat. Now, there's one difference between the top of the kana and the rest of the kana. No, I'm really worried. I'm really getting worried about it.
I can see what it
says. Looking so forward to leaving already.
I'm really waking up to watch into action.
So the top ring is complete. It circles the entire lumen of the kana, because essentially it's really connected and part of the jaw area. So it's coming out of now the jaw, and it surrounds the kana.
That's the only non-horseshoe.
What's that?
That's the only non-horseshoe. Sense.
That's the only non-horseshoe, correct. The other rings...
Except for a bird.
The other rings are shaped like horseshoes. They're almost closed at the end, but at the end, they have connective tissue. What's going on here? They have connective tissue that holds them together, but they don't surround the entire inside of the kana. So the tabat that does go all the way around is called the tabat hagdolah. So here it says the Mishnah Hashochet mitoch ha-tabat v'shiyer b'mlo ha-kut al-pnei kula shvidato kshira. Somebody's got his knife all the way up on the top of the kana, he's inside of the tabat hagdolah. As long as he leaves the thinnest, even the size of a kut ha-sayra, that's on top of the tabat hagdolah towards the head, and he's been entirely, the shvita's entirely inside that tabat,
Below,
it doesn't go outside. It doesn't turn his knife to go up. He's entirely within the tabat. It's kosher. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Imer, Melo Hakut, Apnei Ruba. Why would you need the whole tabat? Once you shechted rove of the kana, basically you've already completed your shita. So what you do from, because we'll see why basically, because what you do from that point on seems to be the equivalent of cutting meat. So what's the difference if you cut, how you cut meat? You want to cut meat on top, you can cut meat on the bottom. What does that do with your shita? Your act of shita is over. So why would we need alpnei kula? Alpnei ruba would be sufficient. Now the meiser, we're going to see later on in the Gemara, we don't possibly like either of these shitas. And the mokum that defines hagroma is actually higher up than the tabat hagdola. However, between these two shitas, we're going to limit our discussions for a moment. This raises the issue, which we'll get into in detail later on. What is the halacha about the act of shita as long as it's going on? In other words, I could stop. Nobody would argue if I stop at rove that I finish. And then if I come back 5 minutes later, there's two ways of looking at it. They're saying, oh boy, you came back 5 minutes later, that was a long shita, 5 minutes you waited. If I come back a month later, oh boy, it's really possible now. What do you mean, but the meat's been in the freezer, man. What do you mean it's really possible now? Why am I still shopping? Well, you're still continuing the mitzvah shita in the mokum shita. When it comes to the question of hagrama, if I turn up, so then even though had I stopped, I wouldn't have done anything wrong. But now, since I continued my mitzvah shita, maybe I'm now possibly it by being magrid. Now, it would seem in our Mishnah, we'll get into the details of this in the sugya as we go along, that Rabbi Yehuda says, having once completed what would have been a kosher shita had you stopped, what's the difference if you continue? Up until that point, it's a shita. From that point of Ravan, it's just cutting meat. Whereas the Rabbanan Taina, as long as you're shefting, all of the dinim of shita apply. Even if you could have theoretically stopped, you didn't.
Didn't we say the
Dima
after the Roman
Simon Shafter? No. Okay? Never said that. Said the Gemara, Rav Shmuel the Amir Karvayu, Halacha Krav Yosef Rav Yehuda. So Rav Shmuel say, first of all, the Halacha is like Krav Yosef Rav Yehuda that you only need Malach with Alpanei Ruba. The Ah Krav Yosef Rav Yehuda, Lama Alabit Tabat Hadgola. Now that statement was only said, Legabi the Tabat Hadgola, Hoyalama Kefet Kolakana. Since the Tabat HaGdola goes all around the windpipe, Mamela, if you go through Rove of the Tabat HaGdola, you've cut, basically, Rove of the windpipe. Aval Bishara Tabaot Lo, Mashenke, if you would be cutting the Rove of the other Tabaot, since those other Tabaot end before the windpipe does, and then they just have connective tissue towards the back, you could check the Rove through the tabat, but you still haven't checked the rove of the windpipe. So if at that point you would be magrin, then you would be even according what they seem to be saying is that even a little reviewed, huh? You would at that point be passing it because you didn't cut rove if you were magrin.
And there's no way to cut between the rings. You always cut between the rings.
No, you can certainly cut between the rings. Let's, we'll talk about between the rings in a moment. Now, this is the way most of the Rishonim learn. Rashi brings this as his third possibility. He doesn't bring it here, brings it on the base. He doesn't like this Pshat Megumar. And he doesn't like it because it doesn't talk about being magrim from that point on, meaning being magrim outside of the Mokum HaShchita completely. I mean, you're talking about a rather strange thing. A guy is on the seventh ring down. He cuts through most of it, and now what? Now he's marching, and it goes all the way up into the head? I mean, that's weird. Rashi is like, I mean, like, why would I think that's the case? Therefore, Rashi is forced to the conclusion, which everybody argues on, that what we're talking about over here is, can you shech b'chalal in the rings, or must you shech between the rings? And what he's saying is that Aliba, the pshat of Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, Rav and Shmuel are coming to say, don't think that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda identified the area of the kana with the rings. He didn't. Only between the rings is kana. Because it's only in the Tabat HaGdola, since the Tabat HaGdola goes all the way around, that it's viewed as an extension of the kana. But in a ring that doesn't go around, it's b'chlama considered to be a mokum shvita. So there's a new concept of agroma over here, which is cutting shalom b'makom shmita in a tabat other than the tabat agdola.
If you can't see it, I can see the tabat.
What do you mean?
You shaft from the top.
You feel it in your own throat. You feel the tabat.
No, he's got the skin.
Of course you can. You're pulling up a neck. You can feel the tabalas all the way along the neck. Do it in your own neck. You can feel your tabalas. Stretch your neck up. Put your hand along the trachea, and you'll feel.
Thick skin and.
No, listen. You're not that thin, and you can still feel your trachea. Try it. Try it. So here you can actually see, by the way, very, very clearly, the tabot haktanot and the plasticky membrane between them. You see that thick tabot over there? And there you've got plenty of space between them to get between the tabot. Plenty of space, look at that.
He's so exact to know where he's going to hit it.
I can look afterwards to make sure, but why not? Anyway, we don't pass them like this. This is Rashi's shot in the Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, the way Rabbi Shmuel is talking about. So if you shef inside the other tabaot, the shkita is beklal not kosher. Amazing shot. It's only kosher between the tabaot. What about rove? Rubo kakulo. Didn't Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda say if you shef rove, it's kosher? Explains Rashi, rove is only a shear of how much. But rove, if you're in the Makom Shechita, but rove can't define what the Makom Shechita is. And since this doesn't go all the way around, it's not the Makom Shechita. Well, it's not a corner. You're shefting the wrong thing. All right?
Shefting this cartilage
rather than corner.
But then it goes through to the cartilage on the other side.
What can you do? There is no cartilage on the other side. And it goes
the skin, shall we?
Yeah. Not shall we say. Better say, otherwise it's right. So now the differences here are enormous, right, between Rashi's pshat and the other.
Just the windpipe and
the windpipe, again. Trachea. Okay. The thing that the guy who wants to throttle somebody would be careful to pinch shut. Unless he just wants him to lose weight. Asks the Gemara, you're saying Bishar Tabaot Lo? That in the other rings, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda would not have been Makiv. I find Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, amen. How Shofet Bishar Tabaot, Apapi She'en Mekifot et Kol HaKana, Horil Mekifot et Rov HaKana, Shkitatot Shira. Now hold on a second. Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda is reported as saying the exact opposite what Ron and Shmuel just claimed. They said that no, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda never suggested you can actually shef in the other tabaot, the way Rashi is learning, or that we can view the tabat as defining the kana. Here he says the first you can shkitas hakshir umugrenet sula. It's a separate issue. And a mugremet bichlal, even if you would have rove in the tabas, wherever you would have the a mugremet, this would be not a place with Yosef Rav Yehuda, we'd be going back now, I'll leave it to Rabbana, a mugremet would be possible. Hey, Rav Chanina, then I'm taking a mugremet sheik shera. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean he argues on the concept of hagroma in the five dinim of shkita. But on what we've been calling hagroma, as if hagroma is defined in it by the tabaot, forget about that. That's not what mugremet is. And mugremet of this type is completely kosher. Omer of Yosef, and this is Hayid. Hayid is the most powerful of the bases of halacha, in which a person made that this he was makabo as halacha l'moshe misinai. And in fact, this is how we fast, not like the Mishnah. Omer of Yosef. Says Rav Yosef, you are absolutely correct. Of course, Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda himself held that you can shech also in the other tabaot. And Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, Tateka Amar, he said both things. It's Rav and Shmuel who argued on him. They said the halach is like Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, but halach is only like Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda in the Tabat HaGdolah, and not in Shar HaTaba'ot. Shar HaTaba'ot. So, says the Gemara, wait. V'lo Omar Ka'amir. That's not what they said. They said, even Rabbi Yehuda never said about Shar HaTaba'ot. And now you're saying, no, he did say, but we don't agree with him. Well, then why did you say he didn't say? He did say. We just saw that he said. No, what we mean is he didn't say anything. Meaning, forget about the man behind the curtain. He didn't say anything because it's not true. You can ignore what he said. That's what they're trying to say. Hokikama, what they mean is halakha kemoto b'taba'at ha'gdola v'ein halakha kemoto b'shar taba'ot. So we paskin like him, meaning he said something, lo omar, la halakha, in other words, in the Taba'at HaGdolah, but he didn't say anything, meaning anything meaningful, about the rest of the Taba'at, because we don't know it like him. So now we have four different shitas, correct? We have the Tanakama of our Mishnah, who holds the entire shita has to be inside the Taba'at HaGdolah. We have Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the robe of the shechita should be inside of the Taba'at HaGdolah, or for that matter, the other Taba'ot. We have Rav and Shmuel who say, well, robe when it comes to the Taba'at HaGdolah, but not when it comes to the other Taba'ot. And then we have the Eidus, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, who says, this whole thing is not Hagram. Even if you go out of the Taba'at HaGdolah, it's not Hagram.
The whole
windpipe is kosher. Nothing better than a giraffe. Ki solik Rabbi Zera, not when Rabbi Zera came there to Israel, Ochav Mugrem is the Rav and Shmuel. He ate what Rav and Shmuel claimed was free. Because in Eretz Yisrael they didn't hold of that halacha. Amr said, well, Rav Miatah to Rav and Shmuel. Don't you come from the town of Rav and Shmuel? Omar Lahu, so he said to them, Man Amra, who said that Rav and Shmuel said that Ein Halachik Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda? Who said that? When it comes to the issue of the Shar HaTaba'ot. You know who said that? Rav Yosef. You know, Yosef Bar Chia. You can't trust that guy. Yosef Bar Chia Mikulei Alma Gomer. He says things over for anybody. Hears a word from somebody, reads it in some little book, says over that he heard from somebody that Rav and Shmuel said it, so he says Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel never said it. Perfectly okay. Now, Rav Yosef heard about this. This generally happens. So Shammai Rav Yosef heard this. Boy, was he upset. Itzvi. Omar, what the heck? I'm a Mikulei Alma Gamirna of all the things say about me. I'm the one who's most makbid. Because I am the one who learned by Rabbi Yehuda, and I'm a Rabbi Yehuda Gamirna. Rabbi Yehuda was known as being so medakdeh that I feel it's vacant in God regards. If the one who told him over something wasn't 100% sure who he had heard it from, he would say it over as a suffix, for instance. That's the way Rav Yehuda would say things over. We found this many times that he said it like that. Suffolk was a grandfather, so to speak, was of the Shmuel. So what kind of business is this? You don't. By the way, the case over there was, but since we don't trust Kohanim, so we need to have somebody to paskin. Normally we have a mumcha paskinim, but on a very clear mum that any idiot could see, if you get three people together, they can be a bezdin, even though they don't have a smicha for a heter b'choros, they can be a bezdin to allow a kohen to shek a b'chor, because it's obvious. I mean, it's got a leg cut off, but what do I mean? But in order to avoid the kohen playing games, since part of that is that he's going to have to present it to people, they're going to ask him, how did that happen? And it makes it a little tougher to pull shtick. So three people are kosher for that too. And anyway, take a look how makbid I am. Okay, but Rabbi David didn't trust Rabbi Yosef. So he says, I don't believe that Rav and Shmuel ever said this. Says the Gemara, so what? So you don't believe he said it. But I mean, that was the minute, wasn't it? So Rabbi Zera lets lay notes nibala chumreyama komshia samisham. The chumreyama komshia lakusham. I mean, Lamaita in his town, where Rab and Shmuel were the rabbonim, it had become now a long accepted tradition that you don't eat a animal that was shechted being semet on the Shar HaTaba'ot either. I'll leave the Rashi pshat or the other pshat. So you're going to view that as a mugremes, and he says it's not a mugremes. How could that be? Omer Abaye, because the only time that you have to be machmer on the location that you left is if you're in the same country. Ani mili mi bavel above. See, you go from one town in Bavel to another town in Bavel, or one town in Eretz Yisrael to another town in Eretz Yisrael. Over there, you have to keep the chumras of the town that you left from. Or for that matter, even if you went from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, you'd have to keep the chumras of Eretz Yisrael in Bavel. But the other direction, from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to keep the minhagim of chutz laretz in Eretz Yisrael, because kivan da'anan kaifinam lehu avdina kavasayu. Since lamaisa we are dependent on Eretz Yisrael, if we want to don dinim that require smicha, we have to go to Eretz Yisrael. There's no smicha bavel, there's no dinim knosos, unless we're doing the things that we're told to do from Eretz Yisrael, and Lagabe Kiddush HaChodesh and so on, clearly we're dependent on Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, since he was going from Bava to Eretz Yisrael, he ignored the minhag of the city. He said, but his own Rav, I mean, how could he go against Rav and Shmuel? He didn't believe Rav and Shmuel ever said that, because it was only quoted by Rav Yosef. Rav Ashi says, you're not to come on to that. Hapivu temen mi Bava to Eretz Yisrael. Even if you would say that you do keep the minhagim of Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, but that would only be if your das is to be chozer to Bavel. But Rabbi Zera had no intention of ever going back. So Rabbi Zera in das olav zorav, and therefore he dropped his minhagim from chutz laretz, even they were lechumra. Omalei Abaye le Rabbi Yosef, Abaye tanya to Rabbi Yosef, you know, Rabbona diosu mechuza amri. I can only tell you that the Rabbanan that came from Mechuza quoted Omer Zera Mishmei the Rav Nachman, that the Mugremes of Rav Vishmuel, in other words, is Kshera. That they said that Mugremes is Karsha, and this is in Mechuza, and we, the Mechuza in Baval, and we in Baval nonetheless have been knowing a chumrah on this, like this rumor that's going on, that Rabbi Yashid said it was straight. That Rav Shmuel here said it was straight. Oh, my way, no. Nahara, nahara, upashte. Every river sort of goes its own way, you know? So basically, yeah, there's places, you have a river. The river breaks up, there's little tributaries here, there. There's places where along the river, people will be marked near, like this Rav Shmuel. And there are other places where they're not, but you can't tie that. There doesn't have to be a consistent, necessarily, tracing things back to the source of the river. No. This is the beauty of the marshal. I guess you think, okay, you have to trace everything back to its source. Like you trace a river back to its source. So what's the source of the Menhagim above all? That's unimportant. Because Menhagim are not sourced. Menhagim develop. So the same way that a Nahar has tributaries, great herbs. You have some people that live off of this Nahar part of the Nahar, some people live off of that part of the Nahar. You can't ask the Kasha from a minute, you're going to say, oh, but in Mechuzah, they didn't hold the Rabbi Shmuel. Big deals. So that's the way the minute develops. And therefore, you can't ask a question as to why there were no Egeta there and this or there. Reb Shimon ben Lakish, Aksha Bechuda de Kupa. Now, Reb Shimon ben Lakish, he went all the way. And he said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, forget about the Tabata Gedola. You can go all the way up to the top of the helmet, and you could still have a kosher shechita. Now, the helmet that we're referring to over here is, there's a very nice picture that Rafi just showed me. Oh, he has it better?
On the back side here, is that better?
That's a bird, though. No, that's a deer. Here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a little bit. Yeah, let's just take a, I mean, here you can see it, but he does have a drawing. If you take a look over here, you have a very nice drawing of the what's called the Kova Matan, which is the epiglottis, which is way above the top of the Taba'ot. You see the Taba'ot coming up here? There's the Tabata Gola. Then you have a helmet like up there that goes over the top. What Rish Lakish was saying is all the way up here, it would be kosher. Now, it's important to note in this picture, although this is really a little bit of a maslokas, but you have over here these cartilages that stick out. They look like little beans. So some hold that those are called the chiti. If you take a look over here in the actual photograph, you can see that he's identifying the chiti with the vocal cords themselves. Again, that's not, but he's looking down from the top.
Okay.
Right, so you can see the cords sort of closed up, here stretched.
That's the disc
in the middle. Well, you can scream it too. And you can see when it goes lower, this is very good because this has been cut through one of the smaller rings.
Uh-huh.
You're looking from the bottom
towards the
cova, and here you see it's a horseshoe. The hole stops there, and this is just connective tissue.
So
it's holding it together.
Otherwise, it'll block
the ring. You cut through the ring itself.
It's not the big ring, is it?
No, the big ring would go all the way around.
The reason for the horseshoe is so that the food won't get stuck on the way down, by the way.
It doesn't go, food doesn't go there.
No. You're pushing against a hard piece that was here, that's why you have the soft membranous there so that it will go down.
Here you can see the
right. That was the
correct
reason.
That's the one? That's the.
This isn't a bird, but here you can see the veshet going down along the corner. The squishy one is the vesha, the esophagus. They're next to each other, yeah. So Moshe Baruch is saying that to leave room for the vesha to spread, the side against the vesha doesn't have
an easy way to remember the term is the kona eretz for the kona, right? And then the vesha Vashti was killed with the feet.
Okay. So anyway, now Rabbi Yochanan was not very impressed with that psak, and Korele Rabbi Yochanan said to him, Gisa, oh boy, that's going a little bit too far. Others learned Gisa means, it's very cute, hey Gis, meaning my brother-in-law, Gisa, you've gone too far this time. Right? Which is cute, because Reish Lakish, of course, wasn't brother-in-law. The little problem with that geese in Hebrew is not a brother-in-law in the sense of a man married to your sister. A geese is a brother of your wife. So it's the wrong word. The Mishnah, man, we talk about the various another one nodding off there.
It doesn't work in the reverse?
No. We don't use that as you can in the modern Hebrew, you can, but in the Mishnah there's always a machalic between them. So maybe he's using the word, loosely, but it's cute. He's saying gisa, gisa, you know, and if it was the goose that they had checked, it would be even better. Gisa, 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 and that's already, you know, so guts and a goose, that's really overdoing it. So he didn't hold that you could go so far up above the Tabat HaGdolah. And we'll see later on what the various shiurim might be about this Tavas HaGdolah, how far up you could go. On Rebbe Mishnei Derava, Poga Bechiti Treta. If you got up, now it's not clear whether there's two ways of understanding this. Poga could mean, gee, if you were Pogea, meaning you damaged them in any way. Or Poga could mean, if you got all the way up against the Chiti, you're too high. Now, as I showed you, one approach to the chiti is that it's referring to the vocal cords. Another approach is that it's referring to the cartilage that out of which the vocal cords come, where there's a little extension that they grab onto. It isn't clear, the cloud. There's many, many approaches. It isn't clear what the chiti exactly are, and it isn't really that nogea. What it is, because nobody chefs in such a way anyway, b'chatchila. So it's not a dover that really comes up. But and it hasn't been determined to anybody's satisfaction what exactly is meant by the chiti, because Rashi uses the word glance, and what's that supposed to mean? I mean, there isn't anything there. I mean, we're talking about various cartilages and membranes and so on. What glance does he mean? All right, it's a strange thing. There were many poskim who went out the dafka to try to figure out what it was. And, They had a whole, they did research with all of the experts and so on. Basically, no one knew exactly what the feet are. And even if it means these bit, what they call over here, the cartilages, if you see it sticking out, that look really like two beans sticking out on either side. It isn't clear what particular part of them it means. If you take a look in this picture, you can see that there's a place in which this cartilage sits over, as if it's a piece on top. It sits over the edge of the cobra and provides a base for the vocal cords. Way down here, we're talking about here, we're up in the cobra. So, okay, I mean, you can see why you'd call that a bean. I mean, it looks like chitin. But in any event, what did he mean when he said, Paga b'chiti trefa? You boil it. Paga b'noga b'hen? Do you mean to be poga, mean to smash them? And we find that lashon. It says vayivgabo vayomot. I mean, obviously, vayivgabo over there means to be pogeado. We use it in modern Hebrew. We are abo v'pagabo. So is that what it means? Odima paga, meaning to reach up to something. V'lon nagar, I mean, literally touching it. Yeah. Vayivgubo malachei Elohim. So vayivgubo doesn't mean that the malachim they shot at Yaakov. Vayivgu means that they met him right up at that point where he was coming out of Eretz Yisrael into Chutzar, Vayivgu Ubo, or vice versa, Vayivgu Ubo. So maybe then what he would be saying is, if the knife got all the way up to the chiti, not going to cut through the chiti, got all the way up to the chiti, that's too high. And once you're that high already, then it would definitely be agroma. So in other words, even though we have an edus of Reb Chanina ben Antignus, that the hagroma that we've been discussing is not hagroma, it's not clear what is hagroma. Is the hagroma at the beginning of the Shifui Kova, where the kova itself here starts to bend in the helmet? Or is it the schitim, which is right over here? I mean, you're talking about differences in millimeters, that's what we have to do. Or is it all the way on top? Where Reish Lakish is willing to say, he went all the way up to the top of the coat. The chud of the kuvah is all the way on top. Look at that. Basically, we have three possibilities over here. So far, this is the chud of the kuvah. What they have, it's basically on a helmet. They have a piece up there on top. That's what they call it. What do you call that little? It's usually decorative on top of that. In the old feather knife, the word. So this would be the chud of the kuva, and it appears also. I mean, there's many armies that actually continue till today. The British had a chud of the kuva just for old time's sake, all through the Second World War. So you have the chud of the kuva. That's how far Reish Lakish is going to go. You have the shipui kuva, which starts to bend over. And then you have the chiti, which are over here. Three different shiurim that we're discussing so far.
What is the basis of where is the shaft? We have it like this for.
Yeah, it's an avis. It's an avis. So which one is it? Itmar, Omer of Papa, Mishmeh of a shear the chiti, chera. As long as you left the chiti, a little bit of the chiti was still left. And there was still some left, meaning that were, so in other words, poga ben noga, as long as you left something there, it would be kosher. Omer Rava Meimar Bar Mar Yenuka, Havikaim Nakamed Rupchia Bered Ravavia. I was standing by Rupchia Bered Ravavia, the Omerli Shir Bechitek Shera, and he said to me, as long as you left some of the chitim above your knife, and you weren't poga from the top, it would be okay. It would still be kosher. Mar Baravashi Amar? Omale Ravino Ravashi. Omale Rav Shaman Misuvra. Ikla Marzutra La Asrin Vedorash. Shir Bafitik Shera. Furthermore, in our location, we weren't always Oka to have Rav Shaman, but came to our location, it was Doresh, as long as you were Mishayah, in the Fiti, it's kosher. Only if you got up to the feet of Mitzkosher. But if you actually hit them, even if you left something towards the top, Shir Basiti Trefa. The halakha, however, is v'hilkasa mishipui kova ulamata kshera. It's kosher from the place where the helmet begins to bend over, as I showed you in the picture. V'hainu d'shir b'fiti. And that is like the man yamar ol shir b'fiti kshera, because if you shecht it at the shipui kova, you would get b'fiti. This is how Rashi learns tomorrow, Bezat Hashem. We'll talk about some variants in Tosis' shot. That's a very different way from my last piece of the